Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. If the engine is near that, then like just the back of the boat, it's just the weight distribution would be...
Yeah, not be good.
Not be good. The front would be like you're popping willies in water if you know. I don't know. Welcome back to the Random Theory Podcast. I'm Josh.
I'm Grace.
And in the Random Theory Podcast, we discover science in life around us.
I like it. That was a good one.
I feel like I was out of order. I don't remember. As I started that, I was like, how does Grace usually do this?
You did good. You did good.
Thank you. Thank you. How you doing? How's things?
Living life. The smoke is back in New York, casting weird shadows everywhere. So that's not great. Michael and I bought an air purifier.
Oh, good.
The last go around. So I'm not super concerned. It's been cranking out. We don't really have our AC going. It looks like hazy outside currently. Real weird, but you know, it's life. Be how it be. Canada's still on fire. So
unfortunately, I was going to say, because we talked about this, I think maybe the last one we did as well, which we're recording this close together, but just saying that it was coming back.
Yeah.
And it was that thing of like, I mean, we talked about it in the one before that about the whole news thing about the Titanic sub and how annoying it is, the news.
Yeah.
But I had that thought. I was like, oh, yeah, what's going on with Canada?
Canada's still burning aggressively.
And it's like the second that is not like the most interesting news, you know, the second that New York is no longer an apocalyptic zone. No one cares. No one cares. You know, people aren't reporting on that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Our air quality is not good today. If I was someone that's like outside working out, like pass.
All of it, all around, very unfortunate. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Something happens soon. They can get a handle on the wildfires. I don't know.
Fingers crossed. What about you? What you been up to?
Dude, not much. Not much. Same old stuff. Just band and other random junk.
Same shebang. I'm here for it.
Luckily, no wildfires here yet.
Nice. Yeah, normally Utah gets smacked pretty heavily. I feel like the last two years like have been real bad in the summertime.
Yeah, they have. There's been really bad ones either in Utah directly or somewhere in like one of the neighboring states, and it just settles in hard here usually.
Well, Texas is quite literally on fire right now.
I've seen that. There's what's so can you explain what I've seen, like there's some name of some current or something.
I haven't looked at the current, but I know there's a giant heat dome just sitting over Texas, and it's basically kind of how we talked about previously where you have this high pressure system that's just sitting. That's basically what's happening in Texas, and there's not a low pressure system strong enough to come and like move it out of the way. So Texas is just quite literally on fire.
Yeah, that's awful. That would be unbearable, really. So before we started recording, you mentioned something briefly, and I was like, no, shut up. Let's talk about that. Literally, like that was my reaction. I was like, no, don't talk. So what?
I just can't imagine being in school or in college at this point with like the world of AI happening.
Right. So you saw it was like what did you say? Was it New York Times or what was it?
The Times. The New York Times. They call it the Times now, I think. Literally, it's called like AI hits American schools. And like basically they're banning AI in schools. Which, you know, to me kind of makes sense. But at the same time, like if I was a school system and I was a school, I would be figuring out how to teach these kids how to actually use AI to like benefit their lives and like to use it, because like I talked about with the coding podcast, like this is where the world is going. Like this isn't going away. Like you need to learn how to like use it properly. I know me as a student, I would have taken full advantage of AI. I wouldn't have done any work. I would have had it write papers. I would have had to do X, Y, and Z. But my sister in college, she was a TA, and apparently she had a couple kids turn in lab reports, and now everything is AI checked. So like she had some kids turn in lab reports, and basically like an AI flag came up of like, this was created by AI. So like they have ways to like see if it's like real or not. Like she could even copy and paste it into like Chat GPT or whatever it was and be like, did you write this? And it would say yes or no.
But did you see that news article though? It was a couple weeks ago, maybe a month or two, I don't know, that came out, I think it was out of like Texas somewhere, that some professor did that and it wrongly said that it wrote it, and he he failed the entire class.
Wow.
And then you know, somehow they worked through it and found out, oh no, ChatGPT was wrong.
Well, that's the other thing, is ChatGPT can be wrong.
Oh, it
because
can be
not
very
everything
wrong.
On the internet is true, and it's learning from the internet. So like, I'll be honest, like I use ChatGPT to do our like community questions. Like when I set those up, like I'll be like, hey, give me 50 fun, random, whatever questions. And I still go through and I like check them and make sure they're correct and factual and whatnot, because I don't completely trust it. So I like, that's what I mean when I'm like, we need to be teaching kids, like, just because AI spits it out doesn't mean it's right.
I mean, it is like a really weird, it's a weird time, and it's super hard for everyone, I think. Cause like, that's the thing, is I was thinking back to like when I was in school, high school or whatever, like I would have been the same way as you. Like I would have been so deep in it, using it for every, like any way I could. But like, it's also the same thing of like, even when I was in school, there were so many of those things about like cheating and like, oh, using like, suspecting them of cheating in this website and this thing, like Spark notes or whatever, for like a book report. And it's like,
there is nothing more annoying than when your teacher was like, if you had Spark notes, you're gonna fail this test.
Because
like,
so it's like,
that was so annoying to me.
I can't imagine being a teacher now, or you know, school district or whatever, with AI, where it's like even worse. But I think you're totally right. It's like, well, we don't need to just like condemn it, because it's not going anywhere. It's like when we did that podcast about addiction, and we talked about alcohol and other like substances, where it's like, the smart move is not to just ban it and never talk about it, because then you have all these kids are going to get curious and use it probably in a nefarious or incorrect way. Yeah, they need to be educated on it. And then maybe use it in a constructive way. Use it as a tool, which is what I think AI is now and is hopefully still going to be for a lot of people in the years to come.
I mean, technically, we've all been using AI forever. Like in college, I would use AI to like teach me how to do a math problem. Like if I was doing the homework and I like literally could not figure out how they were getting, like how to get an answer, like I would go in and like plug it in and like to these different websites, and it would show me step by step how to do it. And AI can do that. And that was, I mean, technically AI, like it's a calculator, but I don't know. It's just one of those things that I think if we learn to use it as a tool for success, like it can be like another like thinking partner alongside you. So I don't know. It's just kind of interesting. I'm very curious to see how it all plays out.
Can I live for like 5-10 years where nothing's making the history books, you know? It's just like,
I feel like I don't even know how like you write this chapter of history in a book like 50 years from now. Like what are they gonna say about us? Like feel like in 50 years we'll look back and this will have been the new age of technology. Like we'll look back and like this will have been like one of those like turning points, like where like all of a sudden like there was internet and that was like a new age, and then there were cell phones and that was a new age, and now we're in like this another new age of technology and all this stuff. So I think it's really interesting.
It is, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But
my kids are one day are gonna be like, Mom, do you remember when AI came out? And I'm gonna be like, yes. And like
How did you survive before AI was a thing? Like, what did you even do?
I'd be like, well, I independently thought for myself, sweetie.
They're like, what? You did what?
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of, we're taking a step back in time today.
Yeah, no AI. No AI.
There was no AI here. That is for sure. These people figured it out all on themselves. I don't know how, but they did. It's amazing.
Yeah. Some serious, just like old school engineering right here.
Old school engineering is exactly, exactly right. Let's see. I have a rating and review to read.
Okay. Yeah. Hop into that rating and review from Apple Pod.
Mine is from Apple Podcast. 5-star review from the Kroots fam. Thank you, Kroots fam.
Nice.
Oh, they title it OGRT. Love that.
Okay.
Welcome. Yeah. Thank you, Kroots fam. They said, hi, I had a comment about the coding episode. Wonderful. First, Lego League is an organization that gives youth a chance to code and use critical thinking and problem solving by coding the robot to do different tasks such as lifting, pushing, pulling, and such. I speak from experience that you use a lot of critical thinking. Me and my team face so many challenges by making different attachments and designs of the robot and projects. Read more on that. Thanks, Scott. Scott, nice. I was a part of the first Lego League back in middle school.
Really?
I was the only girl.
Oh, right on, right on.
But I thought it was so fascinating to like program a robot, and we would each take turns like taking it home and working on the code. So I was in charge of making it follow a line. And that was like the first experience I had with it, with like critical thinking, problem solving, and like teamwork. And I think every kid should do the first Lego League. It's amazing. I'm obsessed with it, truthfully, and I think it is so fantastic.
Was that like a school thing? You had that at your school?
Yeah, it was like an after school club thing.
Right. So we didn't have that at my there wasn't too many. But I had the Lego robotics like set.
Yes. Yeah,
my own self, and I. So I was like my own first
Lego League.
Yeah, first Lego League.
That's awesome. We actually went and competed.
Really?
Yeah. So you go and compete against other schools and stuff. They might have changed it, but each year there's like a problem that has to be solved. And
oh yeah,
the year I did it, it was traffic. Like, how do you fix traffic?
Oh, that's interesting.
Very, and it's like middle schoolers, and so it's like our perspective on traffic and like how you fix
that's cool.
So yeah, it's a really interesting, it's a lot of fun.
That is a prime example of like having that thought experiment for middle schoolers who are eventually going to grow up and hopefully make changes in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like stuff like that needs to exist, and it needs to be common because people need to be thinking like that. They need to have those thoughts.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I love. Like, I look back on it, and I'm like, I wish I would have stuck with it, truthfully, and stuck with robotics, because I think it was really cool, and it also made sense in my mind, because it was such a hands-on, intangible thing that I was really able to understand it. I think it's why I love the Ray Robot video that we did, because like that's something I fell in love with from a very young age, was robotics and engineering and like understanding how it all plays together.
Yeah.
So thank you, Scott. Best of luck to you and your team.
Let us know how it goes. We're invested.
Please do.
Now.
I am. Yeah. I'm very invested. I love this.
All right. I've got the email, which is the topic for this week, pulled from our email, randomtheorypod@gmail.com.
This definitely plays into the engineering and critical thinking that we were just talking about.
Yeah, definitely some serious critical thinking went into this. This comes from Colin.
Hey, Colin.
And he says, I have a pod idea for you. How does a steamboat work? And I have a knock-knock joke for you. Ready?
Oh, I like it. Yep.
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Tick.
Tick who?
Tick 'em up. This is a robbery.
Tick 'em up. This is a robbery.
Oh.
That was a good
up.
One,
That's
Colin.
Funny.
Man, we've had some good jokes lately.
It has. I feel like we've been on a real run of some
a
quality humor. Yeah.
Guys, if you have a rating and review, drop them on Apple Podcasts or send us an email at randomtheorypod@gmail.com. Your ratings and reviews help us out tremendously. And if you are not subscribed to the channel, make sure you are subscribed and have those downloads turned on.
Yes.
Got to have the downloads on.
Absolutely. So should we talk about the actual podcast topic now that we're like a half hour in?
Yeah, that's how we roll.
we should probably jump into it right after this ad.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Imagine living off nothing but coal and water and still having enough energy to run at over 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
That is exactly what steam locomotives do.
Oh, yes.
Although these giant mechanical dinosaurs are now extinct from most of the world's railroad systems, the technology still lives on in all of our hearts.
Have you ever actually seen a steam locomotive?
I don't even know if I rode on one technically. Like, it was when I was little. I've seen them like up close. Like, I've never seen one like actually like crank
like,
over.
Like doing its thing.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah, I've seen one that's like decommissioned just sitting there. But I've never seen one just like ripping, which is a shame.
I think it would be scary.
I think it'd be cool. When I think about like old engineering, it's like the pinnacle. Like that is like just represents kind of just old school engineering. And I think it's super cool.
No, it is super interesting as well. Yeah, I completely agree. So I know that Colin asked about steam boats and we're going to get there. But I felt like we had to talk about steam engines before and like locomotives before we got to like the steamboat.
The engine is a key factor.
It is. Yeah. So steam locomotives were powered by steam engines and they deserve to be remembered because they swept through the Industrial Revolution in the 18th and 19th century. And steam engines rank with cars, airplanes, telephone, radio and television among the greatest inventions of all time. This was literally the first time that we were able to travel like coast to coast.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Like without trains, you couldn't go coast to coast. Goods couldn't be delivered. All that good stuff. You know, it's so interesting because like these marvels of machinery are excellent examples of engineering. But under all that smoke and steam, how exactly do they work?
Yes.
So the first thing we need to talk about is energy. So it takes energy to do absolutely anything that you can think of. To ride on a skateboard, fly on an airplane, to walk to a shop, to drive a car down the street. And most of the energy we use for transportation today comes from oil. But that wasn't always the case.
Mm.
So until the 20th century, coal was the world's favorite fuel and powered everything from trains and ships to the ill-fated steam plane invented by American scientist Samuel P. Langley.
I did not realize that there was a steam plane.
I didn't either until I wrote this. I was like, can you imagine?
Yeah, that's very interesting.
He was actually a rival of the Wright brothers.
Okay, sure.
Of course, you know.
All great inventors. Yeah, they all have a rivalry. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what is so special about coal? There's lots of it inside the earth, so it was relatively inexpensive and widely available. Mm. Which makes it, you know, that makes it really nice to get your hands on because it's everywhere. But coal is an organic chemical, which means it's based on the element of carbon. Coal is formed over millions of years when the remains of dead plants get buried under rock and squeezed by pressure and then cooked by the earth's inner heat.
Nice. Okay. Yeah.
Which is why they call it fossil fuel. If you've ever been confused about why we call them fossil fuels, it's literally because the coal forms over millions of years by the remains of dead plants that are buried under rock and squeezed by the pressure of the earth.
Yeah.
So lumps of coal are really just lumps of giant energy. The carbon inside them is locked to atoms of hydrogen and oxygen by joints called chemical bonds. And then when we burn the coal, or catch it on fire, the bonds break apart and the energy is released in the form of heat. Still the same concept of today. Like if you have a coal, what's it called? Like a briquette or a charcoal grill.
Yeah.
It's this exact same process. Like you're heating up like these lumps of coal, they burn and they release heat. So here is where things get interesting.
Okay, I'm ready.
So coal contains about half as much energy per kilogram as cleaner fossil fuels such as gasoline, diesel, and kerosene. And that's one reason why steam engines have to burn so much coal. That's why you like throw kerosene on a charcoal fire to get it like stoked and going and burning.
Yeah, you use one to get the other going.
Yeah. Because it takes charcoal an immense amount of time to get to a hot moment.
Well, and I feel like you need more of it to sustain that hot temp. You know, I mean, that's why those trains that we were talking about had whole carts full of coal just to fuel that engine.
Okay, now that we know all this goodness about coal, there's four parts of a steam engine. There's a fire where the coal burns. There's a boiler full of water that the fire heats up to make steam.
Mm.
There's a cylinder and piston, which is like a giant bicycle pump.
Okay.
So the steam from the boiler is piped into the cylinder, causing the piston to move from one way than the other.
Yeah.
And this in and out movement, which is known as reciprocation, is used to drive the machine.
Right. And that would be the final piece of the puzzle.
Yep. So the machine is attached to the piston.
Right.
And that could be anything from a water pump to a factory machine or even a giant steam locomotive running up and down a railroad or a boat.
Right. So in the case of, you know, if you look at a video of an old train or whatever, there's literally, I don't know what the exact term is for that piece, but there's a piece of metal attached to the piston that then is attached to all the wheels on the train that as it moves, it spins those wheels.
Yeah. So what I gave was just like the rundown, the very simplified version. And then we're going to dive in a little further. So, I mean, in reality, I say that there's these four things. In reality, there's hundreds, if not thousands of parts in even the smallest locomotives.
Sure.
And steam engines. Like, what I'm talking to you about is like the four basic principles about how a steam engine does a steam engine thing.
Yeah, right.
That's how does a steam engine? This is how. So inside the locomotive cab, you load coal into what they call a firebox, which is quite literally a metal box containing a roaring coal fire. And it heats up the boiler, which is a giant kettle, basically, that's inside the locomotive.
Mm.
So these things were just rolling hot water.
Dude, it sounds so dangerous.
Yes.
Like, you have one big, like however many tons of metal, fireball, coal, like hot burning coal, and also that probably hundreds, maybe thousands of gallons of boiling water as well. Quite
which
the,
is insane
thing. Yeah, yeah.
Not to mention we haven't even gotten to the moving parts yet.
Sure. Well, okay.
The boiler in a steam locomotive doesn't look much like a kettle like you and I would think it would. Like to make a cup of tea, to heat water up on the stove or whatever. But it works in the same way, producing steam under high pressure. So the boiler is a big tank of water with dozens of metal tubes running through it.
Okay.
Basically it would have a bunch of tubes that's taking that smoke and heat all the way through, and it's heating up that water.
Right. That makes sense.
And then the tubes run from the firebox to the chimney, carrying the heat and the smoke of the fire with them. And this arrangement of the boiler tubes, as they are called, means that the engine's fire can heat the water in the boiler tank much faster. So it produces steam more quickly and efficiently. So the water that makes the steam either comes from tanks mounted on the side of the locomotive or from a separate wagon called a tender that's pulled behind the locomotive.
Okay. Oh, so the water, not all the water is stored in the locomotive.
No. So the tender is also where they stored the excess coal.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So yeah, you know, like, so the tender would carry a water tank and the coal.
And the coal. Necessary. Oh,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. And the steam gathers in the boiler and it flows down into a cylinder just ahead of the wheels and then pushes a tight-fitting plunger, which is the piston, back and forth. And a little mechanical gate in the cylinder, known as a inlet valve, lets the steam in.
Yeah. Okay.
So this would basically be like a syringe, if you will.
Right. Yeah.
So like it sucks in the steam and then pushes it out and then sucks it in and then pushes it out.
Okay.
And then the piston is connected to one or more of the locomotive wheels through a kind of arm, elbow, shoulder joint thing called a crank and connecting rod.
That thing gets ripping. If you look at a train, I mean, that's, you said like 100 miles an hour and it's like this metal rod just going up and in and out and up and down around cranking. These wheels just going.
So as that piston pushes the crank and connection rod to turn the locomotive wheels and powers the train, when the pistons reach the end of its cylinder, it can push no further. And the train's momentum, which is like the tendency for it to keep moving, carries the crank onward, pushing the piston back into the cylinder the way it came. So it's like once you get this movement going, it just kind of like does this thing and like maintains and like might not need as much steam.
Right. Well, because the way it would work is... it's going to push the train forward.
Yep.
When the piston is moving outward, I think.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
And so then, so basically you would get like, you know, if you think of the train wheel as it's 360 degrees because it's a circle. So you would have basically like 180 degrees of push, of actual like force. And then it's got to retract and push back out again. So when it's retracting, it's not pushing it forward anymore, but you got however many tons of momentum from this train going that it doesn't matter. Like, it's fine. Yeah.
Not to mention like all the weight from behind the train too, that like once this puppy gets going, like I can't even imagine it stopping into like a station. That seems just terrifying.
That is why you never try and cross a train track when a train is coming, because it does not stop. It might, but it'll be long after it's absolutely destroyed your car. So
it's crazy.
Yeah, I think you laid a good example of how steam engines work. Obviously, using a train, I feel like that's a good that's a good way to like highlight it. But let's talk about the boats now.
The boats. Have you ever been on a steam powered little riverboat?
I don't think I have. No.
I haven't either, and I really want to be on one.
Yeah, it seems cool. I've seen one, I think, but it's probably not steam. Actually, I'm going to bet it's 100% not steam. They have like a one in Disney World.
Oh,
like one
of
the classic looking, like with the paddles. Maybe back in the day it was steam, but I highly doubt they're still burning coal to make that thing work.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've never ridden on one.
I haven't either. So the great steam-powered paddle wheel riverboat have piled the rivers of the United States for more than 200 years. And the Grand American Queen was constructed in 1995 in Morgan City, Louisiana.
Okay.
And it carries the tradition of the elegant 19th century steamboat travel. So this is the steamboat that like I learned about. I like read about it and...
The Grand American Queen.
Yes, was the one that came up when I searched like riverboats.
Okay.
Just like that's where like that came from.
Just to give a little context, the Grand American Queen is said to be the largest river steamboat ever built. It was built in 1995. It was a 6-deck recreation boat.
That's crazy.
And it has since been retired. It was retired in 2008, but the largest, and it looks like a classic, you know, what you would think is like it's got the big rotor on the back and stuff.
The cute paddles.
It's just cute, you know, it's just cute.
The history of steamboats in the United States began with the American inventor and engineer John Fitch. Yeah. Fitch was the first to build and navigate a 45-foot steamboat on the Delaware River in 1787. His steamboat was a mechanical success, but he was unsuccessful at growing the business due to his high operational and constructional costs. Like we said, it's expensive and it takes a lot to like run these guys.
Sure. Yeah.
So to understand how a steamboat works, we need to review some basic terminology. So there are four steam cylinders on a riverboat. One high and one low pressure cylinder are on each side of the paddle wheel. And then there's a steeple compound, which means the steam is expanded twice within the engine with the two cylinders attached directly to each one. Because remember, steam expands, like it wants to spread out, like it has more volume and wants to like grow because those molecules and atoms are hot and they just want to like move and move and move and move and move. So they're like bumping into each other and have so much energy that they just want to like, you know?
No, they want to party.
So yeah, they want to have a good party. So
yeah.
The high pressure cylinder receives quote unquote live steam from the boiler to move their piston down the cylinder bore. And after the steam is expanded in the high pressure cylinder, it's exhausted into a low pressure cylinder. And the steam is then expanded again, allowing more work to be performed than just a single expansion engine. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, which is really cool because like what we just talked about above was a single expansion where it just expanded one time. And then was pushed out. So they're using the steam two times before it's released.
So this is a more efficient or effective version of the train, the locomotive steam engine. Interesting.
Yeah. And steam boats were actually more efficient at doing this than locomotives.
Right. I'm sure it's much easier to push a boat on water than it is to push a giant train.
And also think about it. Like they have access to unlimited amounts of water.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All of this is making me, now I'm just thinking about the steam steam plane that you mentioned.
Yeah.
How does that? You got to carry coal and water on board a plane. Like, no one's checking a bag in that bad boy. There's no drink.
I love that you're like thinking about bags and I'm thinking about snack time on the plane. Like,
you're like, where are my pretzels? Where are my Sun Chips?
Yeah, where are my snacks?
the Biscoff cookies. Where are those?
Oh, gosh. That's hilarious. So the steam then expands again, allowing more work to be performed than in a single expansion engine. And then the Tamden piston means that the high and low pressure piston are mounted on the same piston rod in the way that two people riding a tandem bicycle would be.
Okay.
So a double acting engine is powered by the steam on both the out and return stroke, which effectively doubles the number of cylinders, resulting in 8 expansions in each revolution of a paddle wheel. So the engine is laying down rather than standing on end and is therefore said to be horizontal. And horizontally installed engines distribute the machinery weight over a larger area of the hull, thus reducing the vessel's draft in the water. Because think, if it was vertical in the water, that sucker would be so deep in the water.
Yeah, that's a good point. You'd just be dragging the boat down. Also, you would just like hit into things as well.
And then your stuff is really broken.
Well, and especially too, if like, depending on where it is in the boat, like say, because I mean, obviously the paddle wheel is in the back.
Yeah.
If the engine is near that, then like just the back of the boat, it's just the weight distribution would be.
Yeah, not be good.
Not be good. The front would be like you're popping willies in the water if you know, I don't know.
Really get going fast.
Yeah, if you really start burning some coal and really pushing some steam, you might really, that front end of the boat's going to lift off. Yeah, I wonder how fast a steamboat would have to get going for the for the front of it, because like that happens all the time with like speedboats and stuff.
Yeah Well, there it is. Steamboats, locomotives,
steam engines. I feel like
steam engines.
we got a real good view on how a steam engine works inside two different uses for it, which is fascinating.
It is fascinating because nowadays we just use gas, diesel, all that good stuff because like we discussed before, it's just easier than using steam.
Right. Well, and more efficient. The amount of gas to get the same amount of energy, you would need way more coal to gas.
Yep. But even like the pistons still exist today. Like that is still like what they use in your cars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're still running on pistons.
The breakdown is still essentially the same, if you will.
Yeah. Well, and we talked about that in our podcast about how cars work. It's literally called how do cars car. Yeah, that was cool. That was very interesting. I'm now like just talking about a steamboat. For some reason, the only thing that's popping in my head is I think there was like an old episode of Scooby-Doo or like a movie that took place on a steamboat.
Scooby-Doo Zombie Island. I think that's the one.
Oh, that's a really good
one. I only
one.
Know that because my family, we were big Scooby-Doo people.
Well, so was I. That's like my favorite old cartoon, classic cartoon.
Shut up. No way. All right. Josh is going to go watch Zombie Island. I'm going to go try to make my own steam engine.
Don't burn your apartment down. That feels dangerous.
Yeah, that'd be really bad. I'm actually just going to go pack. That's what I'm going to do.
Okay. Well, less fun, but you know.
Yeah. All right, Science Pals, leave us a rating and review if you like this podcast on Apple Pods or send us an email at
randomtheorypod@gmail.com.
And you know what to do. Drop those emojis that we all love so much. We love you so much, OGRT family. And we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.